Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Happy Friday on The Fan Morning Show. Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Justin Cuthbert and Ailish Forfar. Officially. I was going to make you do a rookie lap and come in here and just talk, and I was just going to shut up. But
that was the first time I was on.
That's true.
Well, I'm with you and Blake, and you guys are just looking at me. Like, am I supposed
to pass the test?
Am I supposed to lead into this?
You passed the test. You won the audition, and you get to talk to one of the best in the biz to start your
I mean, really the greatest. I mean, I talked about working with you.
Like,
that was, you know, what I was really excited about. But Charles Davis every week.
Woo!
Let's be honest here. Very exciting.
Charles Davis, NFL and CBS color analyst, joins us this morning. Hey, Charles, how is it going?
It is going great for me. First of all, congratulations to you both.
Thank you.
All right, now it's official.
Oh, thanks,
I love
Charles.
That. So congratulations. Thanks for letting me come on. This will be fun each and every week talking with you guys, of course. And one quick question before we begin, though. You were talking about making him take a rookie lap. I mean, right out of the gate, we're going to the initiation and all. So in the hockey world, what is it? Like, what is the, you know, the kind of, hey, welcome rookie, you know, when you've made the team, what is it?
Oof. How much time you got? usually, like, the
no, the rookie lap is something specific.
Only the ones that won't end your show.
Yes.
Only the ones that will not end you on day one.
The most common, I guess, fun little tradition is that the first time you make it to the big leagues or you join a team, the team sends you out first onto the ice for warmups, but nobody else joins. So you have to do this lap by yourself on the ice and everyone's looking at you. And it's already kind of silly because you're not skating your hardest. You're just kind of like goofing around and everyone's watching. You do your rookie lap and then they join you. So I thought about doing that to Justin, just like, you know, but I couldn't miss coming in with Charles. So
I'll sprinkle it. Just cut your mic. Let it go. I get it.
What is it for football?
Well, Justin, congrats. It's going to be great.
Yeah, I appreciate it, Charles.
You know, it's the same. It's the same type of a thing. Not so much going out by yourself. I mean, a lot of things are going away, as you know, because people tip things too far, so people aren't doing them. So a lot of it is in football. You make the rookie grab everyone's pads at the end of practice and carry them, or for meetings, the early morning meetings, like the quarterbacks, the rookie quarterback has to bring in the food, the donuts, the coffee, and what have you, and better get the order right. Otherwise, everybody gets, you know, fake upset, that sort of thing. You know, anything like that. Errands. It used to be errands were the big thing. You know, the rookie had to go get the errands and the rookie had to pay for it. And then the biggest one was you'd have a position meeting dinner and the rookie got to, you know, and only really the first round pick got stuck with the bill.
Oh, yeah.
But as usual, people took things too far. And the bills were outrageous.
Or they're buying like $400 bottles of wine from the vintages section.
For no reason. Wouldn't even know what was actually in the bottle, but just order it because it had a price tag on it. And those stories became very negative. So I think a lot of teams have stopped doing that, which I think is a smart thing. You don't want to alienate people. You just want to, you know, you run out, you know, you let someone skate out by themselves. They're not going to carry bad feelings on the rest of their life, but you stick up with a $50,000 bill right out of the gate, they will never forget that. You know, that makes no sense. So I get it.
Yeah, I mean, that happens in hockey too. There's some stuff that's, you know, it crosses the boundary of what's probably appropriate, but thing like the rookie lap, that's something that you'll see every hockey season, and it's always a good thing. Sometimes they're, you know, without a helmet, and they get to have this big smile that they're flashing, and it's a moment that is generally a heartwarming and successful one in hockey. But we're here to talk some football, so let's get into it. Huge early season matchup Sunday between the Bills and Dolphins, vying for the top spot in the AFC East. Do you expect the Dolphins, after what was an unbelievable second half comeback against the Baltimore Ravens, to be able to hang with the Bills, who have just been, you know, far and away the class of the NFL, at least through 2 weeks to start the season?
Yeah, it's a great question. They have been lights out, haven't they? And the best part about the Bills being so good is that that means that they've handled expectations in the early going very, very well. Because, you know, they've been everyone's darling, right? Most people are picking them to be a Super Bowl team. If not a Super Bowl team, at least AFC championship level. So it's been heaped on them over the last few years where it's grown and grown. And now it's like, okay, you're the team. You're the one that everyone's pointing to. It has not affected them at all. I mean, they go to Los Angeles and wipe out the defending champs on opening night. They come back, you know, the second night and just absolutely blow. I mean, they just look so sharp, so strong, so good. The question for B is the defensive secondary. That was already a concern coming into the season because Tre'Davious White was coming back from the injury. When will he be back and when will he be up to speed? The Dane Jackson with the horrific injury the other night, you know, we just hope that he's A-OK for life, let alone football, and it certainly sounds like he's going to be, and we all breathe a sigh of relief. But Kyler Elam got drafted. He didn't even start opening. He got beat out by, you know, an undrafted or a late-round pick. So will that secondary hold up on the corner? And guess what? Oh, that's Tyreek Hill? Oh, that's Jaylen Waddle? Okay, we're going to find out, because Tua Tagovailoa could not be more confident now. This is the most confident he's been in his career. And rightly so. He's got a head coach that actually believes in him and told him that from the beginning, and now Tua actually trusts it. That's real. 6 touchdown passes, 2 interceptions last game, brings his team from 35-14 down. Yeah, I think Miami's going to hang. I do. They have the game at home. Confidence is high. Buffalo is the favorite and should be. They're the best team. But that doesn't mean Miami's not a good team. Miami is a playoff. They look like a playoff team. You thought, well, I think we thought that before the season. There's a good chance. I think everyone believes that this is a playoff team, and this is an early season playoff type game.
The Bills have seen the Super Bowl champion or the reigning Super Bowl champions and the top seed from the AFC last year, even though the Titans have taken a little bit of a step back. But you nailed it. I don't think they're going to see a challenge quite like Tyreek Hill and Jaylen Waddle, who I think are the best wide receiver tandem in the NFL right now. Do you have any thoughts on my early season hot take?
I think it's a great take. I think it's a debatable take because I'm going to see Cincinnati for the second time this week. And while they are 0-2, I don't think that defensive coordinators around the league are still sleeping easy when they look up and realize Ja'Marr Chase, T. Higgins, Tyler Boyd. You know, they're like, oh, that's a problem. You know, if they get going, we've got a major problem on our hands because they're so explosive, so dependable, and make such great plays. But to say Jaylen Waddle and Tyreek Hill are the best in the league, it's definitely something that can get on the table. And then you just say, okay, you guys throw in your arguments. Who do you have? But they definitely hold up. I think that's a good take.
Look at you, Justin, fitting in seamlessly with good takes, eh?
Well, Ross Tucker mocked me earlier, so now I'm trying it on everyone just to make sure that I'm not totally off.
Ross gave you a little bit of grief on that.
He was like,
I don't know about that.
No, he was more like, oh, you're trying. Yeah, you know, you're trying to be the first one, and you know what? I am trying to be the first one.
Yeah, it should pay off, hopefully.
Yeah, but someone has to be the first.
Right.
I mean, there's nothing wrong with that.
Exactly.
I think Ross is just giving you some rookie initiation on the whole thing.
That's right.
You know, when you sit there and debate it, you say, okay, that's fine. You can give me grief. Give me who the other ones are. And that's what I tried to do. You know, okay, all right, okay, that's a good one. Cincinnati's a pretty strong trio right there because 2 of them were over 1,000 yards last year. And the third who had led the team in receiving for the previous 3 years was 828 yards. So that, to me, that's a legitimate conversation piece. But here in this early going, the way Waddle and Tyreek Hill has, I mean, remember the offseason when Tyreek said the Tua was really accurate and he's going to be, and everybody's like, wow, why are you throwing shade at Patrick Mahomes? Well, maybe he wasn't. Maybe he was just trying to give confidence to his quarterback. And boy, has it worked out pretty well for both of them in the early going.
Well, and I think the obvious thing is that those two receivers with speed that is non-comparable make Tua better. They make his job easier, and they are, in my mind, the best wide receiver tandem in the NFL because they can elevate their quarterback, unlike maybe another tandem around the league. Certainly there are others that can be in that conversation, but and there are better receivers than Tyreek Hill, I think, in the NFL as your number one. But together, I think they're just, you know, putting Tua in a position where he can be his best self, which is certainly a positive attribute.
Yeah, agreed. And the last thing, I'll come back to it. When Mike McDaniel took the job as the head coach, he, from day one, insisted that Tua was his quarterback and was going to be his quarterback. And I think a lot of people rolled their eyes around the league. A lot of people had given up on Tua already. A lot of people thought that, you know, wow, Miami really messed up. They should have taken Justin Herbert. You know, we can go back on a number of things, and I wouldn't disagree with, you know, the Justin Herbert. I think he's exceptional. But this was the first time, I believe, that someone had Tua where he felt, and it was demonstrated day in, day out, I believe in you. And I don't care who you are. I don't care where you get drafted. I don't care how many accolades you have. We all need that affirmation. And he's getting it. And I think he didn't trust it in the beginning. So, yeah, okay, sure. You're telling me this. But, well, I think he knows it now. And I think it's reflected now he's playing.
Charles, you're on Bengals Jets this Sunday. Lots of news coming out with Joe Burrow, who's deleted his Twitter and his Instagram and saying that it's not a big deal. Everybody relax. But how much of a get right spot is them for if how much of a get right spot is it for them this weekend?
It's a huge one, Ailish. It's an absolutely huge one. 0-2 start, you know, we can go all day with what teams do with 0-2 and making the playoffs. And I guess in recent years, even if you made the playoffs after 0-2, you haven't won a playoff game, right? I think going back to what, Seattle in 15 and, you know, whatever those numbers are and those teams. Bottom line is, for them, they've gotten fortunate because in their division, Baltimore was up 35-14 last week against Miami. That got away. Miami won. So Baltimore should have been undefeated. They're not. Pittsburgh, as we've seen, stole one from Kansas, from Cincinnati on the season opener, played an exceptional game, and still should have lost. I mean, you get five takeaways in the NFL, as you guys know, you should win comfortably. Pittsburgh gets five takeaways in opening day against Cincinnati and only wins because Cincinnati's long snapper got hurt. You know, I mean, it's a weird deal. So Cincinnati is getting some good fortune in their division is that teams aren't running away from them. People aren't, you know, piling up victories while they're going 0-2. And I know, again, early season, but yeah. Now, the problem with the get-right part, Ailish, is that these Jets aren't the Jets of old. I'm not putting them in the Super Bowl, okay? I'm not even sure they're a playoff team. But they play better. They play with more confidence. They play with more skill. Was there an amount of luck in beating Cleveland? Did Cleveland open the door down the stretch? Certainly. Was it 2,211 games or some kind of crazy stat for the last team down 13 or more in the last 2 minutes of a game to win a regular season game in the NFL? And the previous team that had blown a lead like that, Cleveland. So, I mean, it just always comes back to Cleveland sometimes doing Cleveland things. But then they turn around last night and win. So that's a good win for the Jets, something for their confidence, second-year head coach in Robert Saleh. Joe Flacco played really well, but he's still holding the position until Zach Wilson gets back, and I think that's the right move for the Jets. So in a normal year, I would call it absolutely a get-right game, and Cincinnati should get right. But now it's a get-right game, and guess what? It's not easy. So that's where things change for them because these are, to me, these are not the Jets of old. This is actually a Jets team that is ascending in terms of getting better, but I still don't think they're a playoff team yet. So I hope that makes sense.
What is it about Joe Flacco? How has he achieved this everlasting status, it seems?
Justin, I think what happened with him was he went through what normal starting quarterbacks in the league go through who still believe they can play, and then you're being told, hey, we're signing you as a backup, or we're drafting your replacement. Remember, he was in Baltimore, and they drafted his replacement, Lamar Jackson. Mm-hmm. So he knew it was coming, but he didn't want to buy into it. He didn't believe it. You know, he didn't immediately say, oh, I can't wait. Here you go, Rook. I'm going to give you all the benefits of my wisdom and experience and guide you. No, I'm still the starting quarterback. I'm going to be the guy. And he gets benched midway through the season. Jackson comes in. Baltimore plays better, goes to the playoffs. So he knows he's done. Is there another place I can go play in this league and be a starter? They try it in Denver. Doesn't go very well. You know, he ends up moving around now. Now he's in Philadelphia. He's a true backup. Then the Jets trade for him. He's a true backup. And now he still believes he can play, but mentally he's starting to make the transition of, okay, I will be ready to play if they call on me, but I also am going to help out a little bit. I'm not saying that he didn't help before, but it's that mental side of it. It's kind of like when Ryan Tannehill heard that Malik Willis got drafted. I'm not here to mentor him. I'm here to be better. Mm-hmm. Doesn't mean I won't be good to him, but it also doesn't mean I'm coming in and saying, hey, you be the number one quarterback, I'll help you. No, you can learn from me while I'm still playing. Joe Flacco has now made that transition, and he knows, guess what? When Zach Wilson's healthy, he's going back to the bench no matter how well he plays. But in the meantime, he has enough pride, professionalism. He wants to show the league he can still do it. And last week, he certainly did.
Charles, another marquee matchup on Sunday. We're spoiled. Got a lot of games. Tom Brady and the Bucs hosting.
Yeah, it's a big week, isn't it?
Aaron Rodgers and the Packers. I think we're all in agreement. Maybe the Bucs offense hasn't looked too great, and now they're banged up with some injuries. Right. They got a suspension. Where's your concern level with just the way that the Bucs have rolled out the first couple weeks here?
I think you've spelled out some of it. My concern level is the offensive line continues to take hits. They haven't been able to gel and have continuity. Remember, Cincinnati changed four of their starters from last year, and that was supposed to get things better for Joe Burrow, and he's still getting hit every single week. And a lot of it is an offensive line takes time to gel, takes time to come together, takes time to fit where you just have silent looks at each other and you know what the person next to you is going to do. Well, for Tampa Bay, it's just been injury after injury after injury. And now you're bringing in guys who weren't even expected to play, and now they're trying to play in front of Tom Brady. So you've got to figure out, how do I keep him protected? How do I get the ball out of his hands so he's not taking hits at 45? And nor does he want to at this age. And anyway, no quarterback does at 22. But at 45, they've really hurt. Okay, so he doesn't have time for this at all. And trying to click, remember, they're also getting Chris Godwin back coming off of the surgery in the offseason. And somehow he made it back for opening night, and it felt too soon. And it was too soon because he got hurt on opening night. So they've, you know, Mike Evans is suspended for this week. So they've got a few things trying to figure out, okay, who's going to step up? Who's going to make plays for me? Can we hold the fort until we can get it all back together and be ready to go down the stretch? And not to mention, Tom Brady's had a pretty good offseason saga that has continued on into the season. We don't know exactly what it is, but we all know what the speculation is. And so he's got to deal with all of that in his own life, as well as trying to play football. And let's be honest about it, A-list and Justin. If you're Aaron Rodgers, are you not sick and tired of losing to Tom Brady? Like, every time you play him, it's a big marquee game. Brady, for the most part, his teams win. The Packers got blown out by him the last time they played. And here comes all of us one more time. Probably for the last time, Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers are sure a field. And then we look up and they're doing it again, either in the playoffs or the next season. So we'll see how that goes.
Do you think the Packers are primed to exact a small measure of revenge? They're coming off a dismantling of the Bears on Sunday Night Football, but they struggled, of course, in Week 1 versus the Vikings. You know, what have you made from them over through the first 2 weeks of the season?
I'd feel more confident in them if David Bakhtiari was back at left tackle and really locked in and playing well. I mean, how many weeks just have we picked up the, you know, our analysis stuff, and David Bakhtiari week to week, we think this could be the week he's back, and he's not. I mean, it's been forever. I mean, he's played what, one game in the last 2 years, and we thought it would be, you know, a 3-4 week process to begin with. So until they get him back to solidify that offensive line, I'm kind of withholding judgment a little bit. They did get Elgton Jenkins back, and that was big for him because he's an all-pro. I think he's better at guard than he is at tackle, but he's darn good at tackle. And this is also a Packers team that's still trying to figure it out at receiver. Those youngsters still have to come along. He doesn't have Devontae Adams as his blanket to throw to. And, yeah, you know, they dismantled the Bears. Bears aren't that good.
Mm-hmm.
All right, it's just no getting around it. Ryan Poles as the GM has to continue to build that team. Matt Eberflus is the head coach, and they just got to get Justin Fields activated. Week one, it was a monsoon. I get it. You can't really throw the ball around. Week two, wasn't a monsoon. They still didn't throw it around very well.
No better example of an offensive line being important than on Monday night when it seemed like Jalen Hurts had all the time in the world to do whatever he so chose. And, of course, Aaron Rodgers, at least versus the Vikings, didn't get the same protection. We haven't really touched on last night's game. Of course, Cleveland getting a big win over the Pittsburgh Steelers. Did you learn anything from the latest edition of Thursday Night Football?
Yeah, I learned that Pittsburgh's got a major question to answer at quarterback. And I know it's real easy. You know, that's about low-hanging fruit, okay? When you barely win your season opener, when you do everything right on defense, and you win because they don't have a long snapper and they can't get the ball on the tee. Well, I call it on the tee. That's what we used to call it back in the day when you actually had a block of wood that you kicked off of. So that's no more. That goes out the window. And then week two, you have New England at home. Your rosters are similar. You're right there, and New England walks away with a victory. To me, that's one that gets away from you. Not to take credit away from New England, but that's one at home, fairly even rosters. You got to find a way to win that game, and they don't. Short week, go on the road, and the same problems that me and Ian Eagle and Evan Washburn, we've watched the game that we talked about. They don't throw the ball downfield. You're wasting great receivers or potentially great receivers. See, that's a trio that, Justin, you can't put there as the best receivers in the league, but it's a trio that has the potential to be. Pickens, the rookie, Claypool, and, of course, Deontay Johnson. That's pretty significant. But the ball's not downfield. Everything's still short. Will the rookie Pickett do that? Because, to me, you're wasting a pretty darn good defense for Pittsburgh because you just can't score. And that's what I took away from last night. And I give Cleveland a lot of credit. Talk about a bounce back after a horrific disappointment against the Jets, letting that one get away. I mean, a comedy of errors down the stretch. They blow the game at home. They should be undefeated on the season. And they come bounce back and win. The only thing I worry about with Cleveland is attrition. Felt like every time I turned around, someone was coming off the field that was significant for them. Although Jedrick Wills, their left tackle, got back into the game, both linebackers got hurt. That's the thing that you worry about in those types of games. Fortunately, they have a few extra days before the next one. I hope those injuries aren't too significant. But my biggest takeaway is that the AFC North is totally up for grabs. No one, I believe, is going to run away with that division this year. And Cincinnati at 0-2, as Ailish pointed out, if they get right, you know, on Sunday, they're literally right back in it at 1-2. And 1-2 is going to feel good in that division.
The only one that's running away with anything is George Pickens with the catch of the year. No doubt about it. That was absolutely pretty. Incredible.
That was pretty. I mean, and that's part of the reason he got drafted. I think where he got lost in the shuffle was because of the knee injury 2 years ago. He missed most of the college football season last year. And this is where I give that young man a ton of credit, because in most cases in today's world, with the injury he had, you don't come back last year. You rehab, you get yourself ready for the draft, you let them remember your best year, and then you come back into the draft. But he wanted to come back and play at a national championship team. And he made it back, I believe, for the last regular season game of the year. Played in the SEC championship game against Alabama, played in the college football playoffs, made a great catch in the national championship game for 52 yards, and went into the draft, having played 4 games. But he did that because he does believe in team, he does believe in being part of a championship crew, and he did extra rehab and fortunately made his way back. I think most people, they never even would have attempted it. They would say, I'll just wait for the NFL. So he gets extra points for me, and then the Landy app on top of it was that catch last night. That's why George Pickens got drafted. That's what he can do. But the quarterback who's playing for Pittsburgh has got to give George Pickens, Chase Claypool, and Deontay Johnson opportunities like that downfield so they can make those kinds of plays.
He'll be fun to watch walk-in highlight reel as of late. So excited to see where he goes. Charles, I appreciate you joining us this morning. Good luck on the call this weekend, and we'll chat with you next Friday.
Thank you, and congratulations again to both of you. Continued good luck. And this is the start of something great, as they like to say. I believe the monkeys are saying that. So, anyway, you guys take care of yourself.
Thanks, Charles. Appreciate it.
Appreciate it.
Charles Davis, NFL and CBS colorist, calling Bengals and Jets this Sunday, which will be a get-right game, one of the big storylines. A lot of teams with a must-win Sunday.
Yeah, early for must-wins, but I'm not sure Joey Burrow and the Bengals could come back from losing to the Jets, mm-hmm. falling to 0-3. He mentioned it. Charles mentioned it. The division is wide open, but, you know, 0-3 is tough to get back from.
No thanks. Aaron Judge, you watch it's must-watch TV as of late. And our Something to Chew On brought to you by Great Canadian Meats.
Yum, yum, yum.
He's on the pursuit of history, as we talked about yesterday. What are you going to do with that ball if you get it? Best of luck to your safety. Georgia Judge's pursuit has to wait another day because he almost hit a home run, almost isn't close enough last night. The Yankees and Red Sox tied at 4. He hit a 404-foot fly ball into center field in the 9th inning. The cameraman is zooming into the moon. Honestly, I think he thought the ball was going to land in Toronto, and it hits, just lands on the warning track. Exit velocity, 113 miles per hour. This ball would have been a home run in 13 other ballparks, but not last night. And this sets us up for something that could be treacherous this evening. Apple TV still continuing to hold the rights to tonight's game, even though, yes, owned by the team, is gunning for an opportunity to share the broadcast. They even offered up Michael Kay to help. And Apple says, nah, we're good. We're going to continue on. We don't want it. And Michael Kay also turned down the opportunity to join Apple TV's broadcast.
Really?
He said, in no way would I want to Bigfoot someone and have him lose his gig for the night. I wouldn't feel right doing it. Being one of the Yankees' voices for 31 years, I've certainly not lacked opportunities to call big moments. If I miss this one, I'll be disappointed, but certainly not enough to take someone's assignment. Wow. That guy's a pro.
That is professional, certainly, but I mean, I actually know a play-by-play guy reasonably well. And the amount of sour, the bitterness, the anger would be off the charts missing a big moment like that. Like, it's probably really, really disappointing for Michael Kay to be in a position where it's possible he doesn't call the record-breaking home run. You mentioned 30 years, 31 years.
Mm-hmm.
Over 3 decades, this could be as big of a moment that he's involved in. I'm sure it's a difficult pill to swallow, but for that reason, he was probably okay with that ball dying in center field and not getting out of one of the 17 ballparks that mm-hmm. wouldn't have that as a home run. Yeah, I mean, he can say all he wants. He can be nice, but it means something to him 100% to be involved in that moment.
Multiple texts in the text line saying, just give Judge the day off tonight.
You can't. You can't afford that. What if he comes up one home run short?
Can you imagine? They sit him tonight because they don't want to have the Apple TV call and he doesn't hit the record. I mean, he's got some time. What if he hits that at Rogers Center? I'm like actually kind of nervous. On Looney Dogs night into the WestJet flight deck?
Hey, I'm all for someone of this city to get rich.
You think?
Off that home run ball.
I was for it. Well, like, you were there for the Matthews record-breaking goal. Right?
I was not.
Oh, I was there.
Were you?
It was in Toronto, right? Wasn't it? The 60th goal on home ice.
I am 95% sure it was, yeah. There was a big one in Dallas. Then I'm pretty sure
yes.
I mean, you were there.
Well, you know, sometimes you forget things.
Right. Spent a little money that night.
Maybe. But Anyway, those are one of those like iconic moments you never forget about. It was in Toronto. I'm looking at the, right? Regardless, Aaron Judge.
You'd rather it
could
be
happen
at home.
On Apple
You'd
TV.
You'd rather it be yes. at Yankee Stadium. You'd rather Michael Kay call it. After last night, I think they probably dodged a bullet. Like, we can't trust anyone to pitch to Aaron Judge right now. Like,
no,
people don't want to be a part
thing.
Of history.
Everyone's just throwing balls at it, and it's so
he
annoying.
He might only get one pitch to hit, and maybe he does hit it. But if it's only one, if he brings it to within one of the, you know, establishing the record, he will at least give Michael Kay probably the platform he deserves. Let's be honest, 30 years, you deserve this moment. Apple TV just flying in there. The worst thing is fewer people are going to see it.
Oh, that's the thing that sucks.
Like, let's be honest. That's the bigger deal here.
100%.
Stroke Michael Kay's ego. I was doing that yesterday, though, so I'm a victim.
That's right.
I'm guilty of it.
Matthews did score a 60th goal at home against the Red Wings. I remember it. They showed Dubas up in the stands. It was really sweet. Everyone stood up. He did the lap, and it was a very special moment. I do remember it.
That was a faint memory of yours.
One last one. Only two ideal scenarios. This is from Ryan in Oakville. Judge doesn't hit any homers for the rest of the year and stays at 69. Two, he hit 61 and 62 tonight in Apple TV. What would you prefer?
I mean, I'm kind of here for the hijinks of him hitting it.
Ryan doesn't like the Yankees.
No. Justifiably so. It'd be cool if it happened here too, though. Just, you know, Jays can't really afford to.
If it happens here, there's no doubt we're not interviewing the person that gets a ball. Like, immediately get a morning show request out there. I want to talk to this.
Well, technically,
individual.
We should have first dibs on
we
this.
We should, right?
Danielle, make it happen.
Danielle. Producer Danielle. We're going to take a break and we're going to talk some men's Canadian soccer team. Lots going on here. They're playing Qatar in a friendly today at 1 p.m. Two more friendlies coming up over the next couple days, and obviously the World Cup rapidly approaching around the corner. How are you feeling about the World Cup? I'm hearing that the establishment is not fully built yet. That's a concern.
Oh, God. I thought you meant how are we feeling about Canada.
Well, that as well.
We'll discuss
Save that.
Save
that for the break. It's the Fan Morning Show with Justin and Ailish. Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Fan Morning Show, Cuthbert and Forfar. I'm officially on my rookie lap. It happened. We discussed it with Charles Davis the previous block. Ailish was going to send me out without a helmet to skate around and do a lap. Somewhat embarrassing.
You're killing it.
But somewhat. A great highlight. Something I'll always remember. My rookie lap. Sportsnet 590 The Fan. And we're now joined by Ian Hume, former striker for the Canadiens men's soccer team and current One Soccer analyst. Talk a little bit of World Cup tune-up games for Canada here. Ian, how's it going?
Not too bad. How are you doing?
We're pretty good. We need some information, though. I mean, we've been kind of, the story is, you know, ducked a little bit out of the headlines as we're, you know, focusing on start of hockey season, NFL season, of course, the Blue Jays run here. And now Canada has these two international friendlies popping up. And really the first big news item since, you know, the summer where there was a little bit of friction and a little bit of an issue between the team and Canada soccer. So where are we with these two sides right now? A little update on what, you know, what's gone on since that game of chicken and the problems that were a little bit alarming during the summer months.
Just everyone got back to the norm, back to their clubs. It's unfortunate the way things went, obviously. I was actually in studio. I was supposed to call my first ever international game that day. I found out about an hour before kickoff what was going on. We weren't really privy to what was happening. But things are back to normal. I believe they're an understanding right now. I believe they're moving in the right direction towards what the original goal was. But all of that brushed to the side. Team or players went back to their club soccer with the knowing that they're in the World Cup. Like, that's the main aim, the main aim that we've had for a very, very long time with Canadian soccer. And that's what they're trying to get the highlight to be, is, listen, we've achieved this. Let's get back to what the success that we've had. Let's go back, play soccer. Things will happen. They've organized these friendlies, obviously, starting today. And that's where they want the highlights to be and the headlines to be, is Canada's in preparation for the World Cup.
So there's only so much you can do with, obviously, all these players going back to their clubs, as you mentioned. But there was an issue with, you know, are we scheduling appropriately? Are we getting the competition that we need in order to prepare ourselves for the World Cup? So with Qatar and Uruguay here, is Canada adequately preparing itself for World Cup competition, given that there are major restraints and that, you know, this hasn't exactly been a smooth process here?
I think they could have done a lot worse. Whether these are the same teams that will give you similar competition as to what Belgium, Croatia, Morocco will, there's a question mark around that, but it's still a game against good opposition. Qatar are no slouches. I know people look at their world ranking and question whether they're what Canada needs to prepare, but they're still a very good side. They are the host nation. They are in the World Cup. Uruguay, they're a class team. They've been a class team for years. So they've been in multiple World Cups. They've got world-class players in Suarez, Cavani, et cetera. They're not somebody who won't give stiff competition. Whether it's what we're expecting from Belgium, Croatia, I don't know, but it's another opportunity for John Herdman to get his team on the field, more minutes together leading up to the first game in November.
I hate that I keep hammering home, you know, maybe questions with a bit of a negative tinge, but another thing that came out recently was that Canada won't be getting new kits for the World Cup, one of the few countries without. Why aren't they getting new kits, and what are the optics around a World Cup outfit not getting something new to show off when they do land in Qatar?
I have no idea. I'll be perfectly honest with you. It's not the norm for Canada, especially in soccer. We don't expect to be lining up and setting up a calendar year towards the World Cup. So whether it's down to the manufacturer not thinking that it's something that was needed, it's frustrating when you look down south and the U.S. have just announced their kits.
They're kind of ugly, though.
I'm not a massive fan, but they've got a lot of following that will tell you that they love it. But listen, we can't cry over little things like that. The back of my train of thought right now would be, oh no, we haven't got a new kit. I'll be honest with you. Qualifying for the World Cup for the first time since 1986. That is the key feature in this, with the whole nation, with the whole everything to do with soccer in Canada, is, listen, we're in a World Cup. Like, that's the most important thing. And whether we've got a new kit or not, to be honest, I kind of like our kit. So, and the fact that they cost as much as they do, Canada could be saying, well, we're thinking about the consumer, we're thinking about the fans. We don't need them going out and spending another $140 for a jersey. You've got these. Let's get more pumping through all the shops around Canada, and let's get our fans kitted out in the black jersey and the red jersey, and get everyone on the same thing. Because what happens if there's somebody who can't afford the new kit? They're gonna have the old one, and then they're gonna be frowned upon. That's not needed. We've got a kit. We're in the World Cup. That's all that everyone should be thinking about. Little things like that are minute.
We're speaking with Ian Hume, current one soccer analyst, former striker for the Canadian men's soccer team. So Canada's dealing with a little bit of injuries leading up to the prep for this. Captain Atiba Hutchinson has been dealing with a bone bruise. He's targeting a return, but it's going to be a little bit of a limited window to regain some fitness before the World Cup. And then Jonathan Osorio also absent from the team with some neurological issues. Any timelines or on both of these players and how impactful that could be just leading up to such a massive tournament?
I was actually texting Atiba Hutchinson the other day, yesterday actually, just finding out how he's feeling. He said he's making great strides. This is the one thing he will not want to be missing. He's built up his whole career around this because I know that for a fact because I started my career with him. Jonathan Osorio, on the other hand, it's a touchy subject. It's one of those you can't rush back anything that's going on with your head. It's something that John Herdman and the whole squad will be hoping that he gets over. I know TFC have definitely missed him in the lead-up or in the push for the playoffs. But it's one of those, I think you play it day by day. You'll sit and listen to the specialists. You'll sit and listen to your body, and you'll go from there. And they're two players who are definitely going to give something to the squad. They will be there. I have a... In my heart, in my head, I think they'll be there, and I think they'll be pushing every boundary possible to get there because they will do nothing but make this squad stronger. So we just have to wait and see. It's one of those, unfortunately, they're missing out on some big games, but they'll be making sure that they're as fit as they can possibly be before the start of the World Cup in November.
Ian, what do you expect to be most relevant from these two friendlies for Canada with Qatar and Uruguay? Stylistically, is there anything that can be linked to either Belgium or Croatia or Morocco or something that the Canadians have to figure out within their own team that can sort of be instructive and informative as we prepare for the real stuff later on this fall?
I just think it's more about minutes rather than comparisons. Getting time together, getting... to know each other again, because a lot of these guys keep in contact, but getting time on the field is the most important part. And that's what John Herdman will be looking at. It's possibly ideal to the outside, not ideal to the outsider, that these are comparisons to who they're going to be playing. But John Herdman he's one of those guys who goes through everything with a fine tooth comb. So he'll have everyone scouted, all the last 20, 30 games that these countries that we've got in our group have played. He'll have them scout, and he'll have an understanding of how they play. You can't replicate world-class players like we have in Belgium and Croatia, but you can also make sure that your guys understand who they're up against, and John Herdman will have that for sure. This is all about minutes and getting extra time together and just prepping the right way, and it might not be 100% the same as what your Frances and Germanys and USAs and all that are doing, but rest assured that John Herdman will be doing everything he possibly can to make sure the guys are ready.
Do we have an idea of what's going on in the camps of Belgium, Croatia, and Morocco? I mean, all these countries are dealing with their own challenges, right? With players being available, dealing with injuries, what's happening at their current clubs. Are the optics, you know, we have the optics and the situation right now for Canada and what they're facing. Are Belgium or Croatia or Morocco facing something that could be relevant as we continue to tee up this the World Cup and Canada's return to it?
Everyone has their issues. Like you said, everyone has their issues, and behind the scenes, a lot of stuff does not come out. I think the best way to prepare for it is just to expect them to be the best they can be. And you have world-class players who play at the top clubs around the world. You've got to expect them to show up being exactly that. And okay, it can be a little bit daunting when you look at your Belgians and Croatians, especially the way they've done in the last, let's say, 8-10 years. They are top sides in the world. Like, Croatia was in the top 6 or 7. Belgium has been ranked number 1 in the world for a while. They're tough, man. It's going to be exactly what is on the tin. The World Cup is the best of the best, and they have to expect that. If anything happens behind the scenes, players get injured. Don't get me wrong, I love them as players, but if Lukaku and De Bruyne and that got injured, I wouldn't be upset. But I'm sure John Herdman and all the Canadian players who've done everyone so proud will be expecting them to be 100% fit, and we're playing against the best that they can be.
Ian, you're on the call today for that Canada Qatar friendly. What to expect today, heading into the final couple friendlies over the next few days?
Just much of the same as what we've seen in qualifying. We've got nearly a full bill of health, apart from the players we'd spoke about earlier, Matthew Hutchinson and Jonathan Osorio. Clean bill of health. We're expecting to go out and put on a show and get used to each other again. Mm-hmm. It's not exactly ideal because you'd like to be in a warmer climate where you're playing similar to Qatar to try and get used to their surroundings, but it's still a 90-minute game. And for me, on a personal note, it's going to be great to be calling the game with Gareth Wheeler on a Canada game, which I've never done before. So I'm excited about that. But everyone that's going out to that game will be just excited to pull on that Maple Leaf jersey again. And for me, I know that was the biggest thing when I was a national team player, was pulling on that red jersey. Mm-hmm. So they'll be ready to go.
We'll have a blast today. I'll be looking forward to listening. And we'll chat with you soon heading up to the World Cup.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Ian. Ian Hume, former striker for the Canadian men's soccer team. And as you mentioned, current One Soccer analyst will be on the call today for Canada Qatar at 1, and two more international friendlies over the next couple of days. Friday, Canada versus Qatar, as I mentioned. Tuesday, Canada versus Uruguay.
Mm-hmm.
It's a big
stuff. Been a bumpy road.
It has been.
And, you know, I get the what he said about, you know, the jersey doesn't matter. Of course it doesn't matter. But, like, it's another example of, like, he mentioned, you know, we weren't prepared, or companies weren't prepared, manufacturers weren't prepared. I mean, we've known about this. This has been likely, mm-hmm. almost certain for a long time. And it's just been, we've shown a little bit our amateurness when it comes to the sport, and almost that our team has, and our talent has surpassed what our infrastructure is.
Yep.
And it's again, it's not a big deal. It's going to be the same 11 out there. Doesn't matter what they're wearing. But, you know,
but it's not often that this is
players
the
care
stage
about it.
You get to.
Players care
too.
About it, too.
This is Canada at the World Cup. It's not a
and I like the jersey too.
Every year.
I like the jersey, too. But when everyone's, you know, you're the only one, kind of, it just...
It felt weird.
It feels weird.
I don't like USA's World Cup jerseys.
They always go crazy with it.
Like, would you rather have this major announcement that you're doing new jerseys and that's what they look like, or just not do new jerseys?
I mean... Mm-hmm. To be fair, I haven't seen them.
Oh,
I should have pulled
Justin,
them up.
They're ugly. They're
but
boring.
I can only imagine. Like, I always, it's very busy. I imagine they always go.
No. It's a snooze fest.
It's a snooze fest. Actually, you know what? Maybe now that I think about it, there. It's like they have like a training thing that's really crazy.
The blue one's interesting.
And then they have a really normal jersey.
The blue one has some interesting patterns.
Some flair. It's got some flair to it.
The white one is just
and I don't
crest.
Know if I even want flair, but I want the players to be happy. And all we heard about in the summer was this discontent and this like squabbling over a little bit of money. It's like our sport in Canada is so strong, and what Olympic athletes get, like the support they get, is mm-hmm. so strong. Like, where's the support for these guys? We got to see it. We got to build on this. We're going to be in the next World Cup. We're going to be at future World Cups. Let's make sure we're doing it right.
Hell yeah. You want to buy some new jerseys with that Waken Rake money you're making, eh?
No. Well,
you
maybe
get a new job, maybe and if that here under-hit, you go. You want to start spending away.
Maybe
huh?
if that underhit last night.
Yeah, it's tough.
Instead, we've got fumbles and, like, just kneel on it, Trubisky. Like, you think you're going to come up with a mirror? You were down. No, they're only down 5, to be fair.
We'll get into
but
that.
But it wasn't going to happen.
I know you're a little bitter, but we got another chance to redeem ourselves. I already know what my just $5 is going to be for 8:30.
This
is a good one.
And I know, too. This is an all-timer.
It might be the best ever.
Might be the second best. There's the Thick King.
You're
I will always
the ref
in it. The Thick King hit was one of the greatest pieces of betting content I've ever seen, honestly. It's very, very good. Mm-hmm. Like, we're all pretending to be sharps and stuff. Like, nah, just have fun with it.
Yes.
And if you win a fun bet like you did, nothing's better.
We'll get back into the Blue Jays. Not really watchable evening. Yeah. Difficult. Jose Berrios' performance. They've continued to struggle so much at the Trop. The idea that maybe they would put Alek Manoah in a 162 must-win for home field advantage and not have him start game one of the wild card series. That is top of mind. That is the hot topic in Blue Jays baseball. We're going to have Doug Wechter, former MLB pitcher and current Rays analyst at Bally Sports Sun, after the break. It's the Fan Morning Show with Justin and Ehlers, Sportsnet 590 The Fan.